Republican U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller has his ballot challenge suit heard by the Alaska Supreme Court. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 17th of December. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the McKenzie Gas Line Project is a step closer, but hurdles remain.
Alaska's has those facilities built on the North Slope. They've been working for years. You're going to have to build them from scratch in McKenzie, and that makes it a tougher project economically.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Pin Air, with 50 years of flying experience and offering charter service throughout Alaska and the United States. Details online at pinair.com. And by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com.
The state's Supreme Court justices heard arguments today from attorneys for both sides in the case Republican U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller brought against the State Division of Elections. Miller wants a strict interpretation of the Alaska statutes regarding write-in ballots. State attorneys want summary judgment. New Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell is now the target of the lawsuit.
The Division of Elections counted the ballots. There was a question of whether or not all the ballots that were counted should have been counted. The lower court said that we did it right. We'll see what the upper court has to say now.
Miller says he'll keep on fighting the case. He told reporters after the court session that the justices don't see his suit as frivolous. The high court justices have taken the case under advisement. A decision could come by Monday. Search and rescue crews are continuing the search for 22-year-old Kenny Lee from Teller. Volunteer teams from Teller and Brevik Mission were out on snow machine until shortly before midnight last night and headed out at first light today. From KNOM in Nome, Ben Matheson has an update.
A search aircraft scanned the area, but poor weather limited its use. Weather has been a prohibitive factor in the search operation. Today's forecast called for blowing snow and winds to 50 miles an hour. Search and rescue crews plan to drag a boat to open water, and troopers are sending an underwater camera. Alaska State troopers were notified yesterday that Lee had left Brevik Mission on snow machine Wednesday night and never arrived in Teller. Brevik Mission is located about 6 miles north of Teller, across Grantley Harbor. Trooper Jonathan Strobel says the search area is focused on the ice between the two communities.
They've been searching around Grantley Harbor area and then now north, you know, toward Brevik and in the hills around there. You know, of course, the ice between Teller and Brevik is the main search area. Searchers have checked all the camps and cabins, you know, in the area, Grantley Harbor area, and still haven't found any sign.
This is the second snow machining-related case in less than a month. On November 24th, Barbara Skolton of Teller fell through the sea ice while snow machining to Brevik Mission. Her body was recovered on November 29th. From KNOM in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
Canada's National Energy Board has approved a natural gas pipeline for the Mackenzie Valley. The process has taken a long time, and there are still huge Aboriginal land claims and financing questions ahead for Imperial Oil and TransCanada. And market conditions have changed since the project was brought up. We have a report from CBC's Aaron Collins in Calgary.
The Mackenzie Delta. A pipeline through this area was first proposed in the 1970s. It would take natural gas along the Mackenzie River Valley through Alberta to markets in the south. Now the question is whether after all these years, the Mackenzie Valley pipeline still makes sense. Alberta's Energy Minister Ron Leipert says his government is still behind the project.
The Mackenzie Valley pipeline has significant benefits to Alberta. You know, anything we can do to fill the pipes is good.
But the head of the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers, David Collier, says he's less convinced the pipeline is still viable.
It's a much more difficult environment in which to get that project off the ground today but than it was when the project was originally proposed. Very unfortunate the regulatory process has taken as long as it has.
If it is built, it won't be cheap, with a total price tag of more than $16 billion. And before that can happen, the project still must be approved by the Harper government. Aaron Collins, CBC News. Calgary.
That $16 billion cost estimate for the project is not money needed strictly for construction of a pipeline. Larry Pursley, the federal coordinator for Alaska Natural Gas Transportation Projects, says about half that amount will be used to develop the gas production facilities to have a product to ship in the line.
A little more than $8 billion of that estimate is to build an oil and gas field up in the Mackenzie. That puts it at a significant cost disadvantage. Alaska's has those facilities built on the North Slope. They've been working for years. You're going to have to build them from scratch in Mackenzie, and that makes it a tougher project economically.
He says there has been exploration of the field, but including the costs of actually drilling for it, he says the project is offering less gas for more money. Pursley says the regulatory approval is good news for the proponents of Mackenzie. However, Alaska's project is not threatened. He says that even if Mackenzie gets full government approval, the Canadians will have to take the same final steps as Alaska's line. Both will need investors and shippers. He says both U.S. and Canadian developers are moving in parallel, doing the same thing.
They're looking at the commercial terms. They're looking at the economic viability. The Mackenzie project sponsors have asked the Canadian federal government for financial assistance, paying for the infrastructure. The Aboriginal Pipeline Group, which represents First Nations in Canada, has the option of taking a stake in the project. They, too, have asked the Canadian federal government for financial help to help bankroll that stake in it. The Mackenzie project needs money just like the Alaska project.
Pursley's office has scheduled a public forum on natural gas markets to be held in Anchorage next month with participation by representatives of public and private sector organizations. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, teaching the Aleutic language in Kodiak.
And the students were really taken by this idea that they should know their language.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
A request to mail questionnaires to potential jurors in the first-degree murder trial of Rochelle Waterman was the subject of a status hearing held earlier this week in Ketchikan Superior Court. Waterman is accused of conspiring to kill her mother with Craig resident Brian Riddell and Klawak resident Jason Arendt. Both men pleaded guilty in 2004 to the first-degree murder of 48-year-old Lori Waterman. Rochelle Waterman's first trial was held in Juneau and ended in a hung jury. The request for a jury questionnaire came from defense attorney Stephen Wells. Wells says he has set aside 4 weeks for the trial and has other obligations following that. He says waiting until the scheduled trial date could make rescheduling difficult if a jury could not be seated.
Essentially, Judge, if we're not able to get a jury in Ketchikan, and I talked with Mr. West about this, if we're going to do this at this time, then we need to get it reassigned pretty quickly. And so we want to find out as far in advance whether we're going to be able to get a jury in Ketchikan.
Wells says if a jury cannot be seated in Ketchikan, Anchorage would be preferred. He says it would be easier to find an available courtroom and jury on short notice. Prosecuting attorney Stephen West says he supports using the same questionnaire that was used to poll jurors in Craig prior to the first trial. He says he would also support Wells' request to move the trial to Anchorage if a jury cannot be seated in Ketchikan.
And I know that Mr. Wells is wondering about, because he wants the trial moved to Anchorage, and I've given it some thought. If we can't get a jury here in Ketchikan, Anchorage might be a little better location than Juneau for a number of reasons. But so I don't know if the court has thought about that.
Superior Court Judge William Carey says this trial has been a priority for the district, and if it needed to be moved, that request would be accommodated. Carey requested Wells submit a copy of the questionnaire to the court. Waterman's second trial is scheduled to begin January 18th. A former credit union CFO in Sitka will serve 2 years in prison for embezzlement. Vicki Wiedenhoff was convicted earlier this year for skimming more than $187,000 in operational money from the Alps Federal Credit Union in Sitka. U.S. District Court Judge John Sedgwick handed down the sentence this morning. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has the story.
No money was taken directly from any of the 3,000 shareholder accounts. The 46-year-old Wiedenhoff was the chief financial officer of Alps until her dismissal in March as the FBI investigation got underway. She currently resides in Chatsworth, Georgia. James Weilman is the former chief executive officer of Alps. He attended the sentencing at the federal courthouse in Anchorage. He says he watched the proceedings with feelings of justice, closure,
and definitely a sense of sadness. You know, I did have somebody tell me, a long time ago that it's just sad because the judge indicated as well, you know, I think he'd never had a criminal history. And I think for some of us that, you know, worked with her and knew her before, you know, this came to light, it's hard to believe, but, you know, hopefully this, you know, holds her accountable, deters others, you know, that might see a similar opportunity in the future from doing the wrong thing.
U.S. District Court Judge John Sedgwick gave Wiedenhoff 24 months and 5 years of supervised release. Sentencing guidelines for the Class B felony range from 21 to 27 months. Wiedenhoff must also pay restitution of $187,348. Alps Board Chair Jerry Christner preferred not to go on tape for this story. He says he's satisfied with Judge Sedgwick's decision, though he thinks some people might feel the sentence should have been tougher. He's glad this incident is behind the credit union now. He said, quote, "We're back on the right road and can focus on the future." Alps interim CEO Al Strawn and board member Roy Anderson both attended the proceedings. Wiedenhoff's sentencing concludes a difficult period for the credit union. Although the investigation had not been made public at the end of 2009, the board did not renew James Weilman's contract. Weilman had been at Alps for 10 years and CEO since the death of his predecessor in 2006. His apparent dismissal generated a backlash against the board that forced them to reveal details of the FBI investigation at a meeting in April. Interim CEO Al Strawn told shareholders then that a lack of internal controls at Alps had, quote, opened the door for Wiedenhoff. Weilman has never admitted falling on a sword for Alps, but he is candid about Wiedenhoff's betrayal of trust.
You know, we went through a lot, you know, at that time, and that brought, you know, us closer together, some of the longer-term employees. But it's the cliche. It's always the person you never could imagine it being. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have the law of the land. We have what's right. And those things, they trump friendship for me.
James Weilman is now the branch manager of the Mountain View Credit Union 1 in Anchorage. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Next month, Anchorage's East High School will offer a newly approved elective for juniors and seniors, Healthy Relationships, Sexual Education. The Anchorage School Board approved the course earlier this month. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
Ariel Zlatkowski, an Eagle River senior who serves as vice president of the Alaska Association of Student Governments, was one of two people testifying at the public hearing preceding the board debate and vote. Zlatkowski pointed to a pair of resolutions from the statewide student organization asking for a comprehensive sex education class in high school curriculum.
Students do want to know what's going on. I mean, I know the district teaches abstinence, which is great, but then there's also kind of the realistic thing that, well, kids aren't necessarily abstaining. So from a student's perspective, this is definitely a very good class to have.
Carol Como said there had been similar requests from other student advisory boards during her tenure as Anchorage school superintendent. But with the 2008 and 2009 resolutions from the Student Council Government Association, the district began actively to create a relationship sexuality course. Rebecca Love was the other person to speak at the public hearing. Love is a member of the district's health curriculum committee and a licensed counselor. She was part of a team that worked over a year on the class. Love said the committee wanted both a content and process course.
So how do students make decisions about their sexuality, about healthy relationships, about negotiating those things that are very pertinent to them at this age? And as you'll see, it's aimed at upperclassmen.
In fact, only East High juniors and seniors can take the pilot elective course. And Como stressed they could do so only with written parental permission.
It's really important parents know what's in there. If they are comfortable with that, their kids can sign up and they can take the class. I think that's as this one should be. That's why I'm recommending it strongly. I think we're ready for this and I think it's time.
I really appreciate the fact that there is that parental component.
Board member Crystal Kennedy said the obligatory parental examination of a detailed course syllabus and written permission was key to her support, as was the described respect for various cultures and opinions.
There are political sensitivities, there are religious sensitivities, there are just family value-oriented sensitivities. What I was looking for was an assurance that all of those different values and different perspectives would be respected, that it wasn't a way of trying to assign a right or wrong type of judgment on somebody's perspective.
Love sought to assure school board members the proposed class did not seek to persuade students into a particular viewpoint.
Well, this has a curriculum. It doesn't have an agenda.
The Anchorage School Board unanimously approved the pilot class. The East High offering will take place next semester and count as a physical education elective. As originally proposed, student remarks and teacher notes were to provide the post-course evaluation of the pilot class. School Board President John Steiner asked the administration to include the students' parents as well. After that, the board will decide if the healthy relationships, sexuality education will continue and be offered at other district high schools. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Kodiak High School is adding an Aleutic language class next month. The initiative follows a decade's worth of groundwork, as well as interest expressed by a group of students. KMXT's Jacob Resnick reports.
In October, a group of Kodiak High School students attended the annual Alaska Federation of Natives Conference, where forum speakers spoke of the importance of preserving the native tongues of Alaska Natives. Kodiak Area Native Association's Youth Leadership Coordinator, Candace Branson, says the students were inspired.
And the students were really taken by this idea that they should know their language. And so they asked if it was possible that someday the Kodiak High School could teach their language. We jumped on this opportunity to teach the students Aleutic because they're interested. So we used what we already had developed. Like NVA had already developed all this curriculum and information for teaching Aleutic someday. It's been a process of adapting the K-5 curriculum to the high school level.
Branson will be one of two teachers in the class. She's also enlisted the help of Alicia Drabik, who has been studying Aleutic for years. Drabik says the language is only spoken by elders and is excited by young people's interest.
We right now, just in a survey that we did with our elders last summer, we identified that there are about 50 speakers of Aleutic in the world that we're aware of for our dialect, for our style, Kodiak Aleutic, and only about 30 of those are living on Kodiak Island. So we have a very limited number, and most of them are, or all of them are over 70 years of age, 70, 75, with our oldest speaker, I believe, at 100 in Port Lions.
Aleutic is closely related to Yupik, which is still widely spoken throughout western Alaska. But Drabik says there are differences that they are trying to preserve.
The Aleutic language, or Sukhtun, is very closely related to central Yupik. So our elders and their elders, they can understand each other when they speak. We generally have, you know, a large vocabulary of words that are specific to our region, so as do they. And the pronunciation of some of our words are different. So it's enough different that it is a different dialect, different language, but they're similar.
The class will be taught 4 days a week starting next month. Branson says they are trying to keep the class size limited, then see how it goes.
The class is open to 16 students at this point. If there's a higher interest than that, we'll try to accommodate. But because Alicia and I are co-facilitating this class, and neither of us are like teachers, certified teachers. So we're
we're trying to keep it a small number so that we feel comfortable teaching it.
Drabik notes that funding has been secured through grants. Perhaps most importantly, the initiative brings together a rare nexus of student interest, grant funding, and school district support.
It just seemed to all come together. I think that the high school was excited to support it. The principal said that if we were able to develop a syllabus and show how we would engage the elders and what kind of content we'd be teaching, that he would be supportive. And so we have done that. We've presented to the school board. We have support from an Alaska Native Education grant that the school district is operating under currently, called the ANSWER grant. And so that's going to help fund the cost of, you know, paying some of our elders to participate in the class and my services as an instructor. And Candace is supporting it as the Canada's Youth Leadership Development Coordinator. So we have really a group of people in a partnership teaching this class, and it all really stems from the youth who went to AFN saying that they would like to have this class.
So far, most of the students to sign up have been Alaska Native, but Drabik stresses that the class is open to all high school students. In Kodiak, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, has been asked to administer the new temporary federal insurance program that allows individuals with a qualifying pre-existing condition and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months an opportunity to purchase health insurance. Capacity is limited, so contact an insurance broker or ACHEA immediately. More information at achia.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed.
Alaska's fast ferries are canceling sailings due to rough winter weather. The Juneau-based Fairweather skipped several runs to Haines, Skagway, and Sitka this week, including today. And the Cordova-based Chiniga dropped a trip to Whittier. Saturday sailings for both ships have also been canceled. Ferry Chief Jim Beadle says high winds and waves give the high-speed catamarans a rough ride.
You just don't want to be taking a chance of hurting people. The boats can take a lot, but it doesn't mean that the people are going to enjoy the ride.
10-foot waves forced the Chiniga to anchor in a bay overnight during a Whittier run earlier this month. The Fairweather is scheduled to sail from Juneau to Haines and Skagway 2 days a week and to Sitka 2 days a week this time of year. The Chiniga is supposed to run from Cordova to Whittier 3 days per week and to Valdez 2 days per week, but Beadle says they're not designed to handle large waves.
It has to do with the height of the, what we call the wet deck, you know, how much space there is between the water and the bottom of the car deck. If they would have built that, you know, 4, 5, 6 feet higher off the water, those vessels could be sailing around Southeast Alaska, but they didn't do that.
The state's two fast ferries have tied up some winters, but they're running this year in part because other ships are under repair. Ocean currents in the Pacific are responsible for depositing tons of debris from Asia, America, and elsewhere on Alaska's shores each year. One Alaskan conservation organization is working to remove that debris to restore the beaches to their natural condition. Since 2003, the MCA Foundation, the nonprofit arm of the Marine Conservation Alliance, has been working to tackle the problem of marine debris in Alaska by coordinating cleanup activities around the state. Anne Vanderhoven is the board president for the foundation. She says 2010 was a great year for the foundation's cleanup efforts.
We collected more than 400,000 pounds of marine debris, everything from fishing nets to water bottles and everything in between, from beaches throughout Alaska. In addition to the marine debris cleanup, we also removed a derelict fishing vessel in the Pribilofs, the Ocean Clipper.
Nationally, the majority of marine debris is believed to come from sources on land. In Alaska, however, much of the debris consists of fishing nets and line, floats and buoys, and industrial packing material that are either carried to the state by ocean currents or left over from old fishing operations in Alaska. Vanderhoven says that much of the debris found in Alaska can be traced back to its source.
Based on the manufacturer and the size of the mesh and the type of the fiber that's used to weave the net, you can narrow it down a lot.
Beach cleanup projects are selected through a bidding process. The foundation primarily uses federal grant funding to provide support to tribes, communities, and nonprofits to conduct the cleanups. The foundation is now looking at cleanup proposals for 2011. This year, the Marine Conservation Alliance Foundation worked with tribal councils in Nelson Lagoon, Port Hyden, St. George, and St. Paul Island. A company that operates a halfway house outside Fairbanks is seeking another state contract to expand operations. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The director of the North Star Community Residential Center says the company operating the halfway house, GeoCare, is proposing to increase the number of inmates being held at the facility in Esther from the present 125 to 143. Director John Welch says the state needs to keep the additional prisoners at North Star because state facilities elsewhere are overcrowded.
Right now, their contract with the state is for 112 inmates, and we hold up to 13 more, so up to 125 inmates. We're holding more than that because they're overcrowded.
North Star is located on land leased by GeoCare just off the park's highway near Gold Hill Road. Welch doesn't expect any impact to nearby residents or businesses, and he says the increase in inmates is the only significant change that'll occur in the upcoming contract period. He says North Star will continue to house inmates who have been convicted of mainly lesser offenses, such as DUI and minor drug law violations, and other prisoners nearing the end of their sentences, including federal convicts.
We try to keep people that have low-grade sentences that were, they may be felonies, but they were less than 5 years.
Welch says he's changed policies and streamlined operations, and he intends to get North Star more involved in the community.
We're joining the Chamber of Commerce in Fairbanks. I've met with the mayor of Fairbanks.
In August, the company that previously operated North Star and six other correctional facilities around Alaska, the Cornell Companies, merged with GeoCare's parent company, the Geo Group. The Cornell Companies was implicated in a complex criminal conspiracy during the 1990s that involved bribery of state officials and lawmakers to gain backing for construction of private prisons in several towns around the state, including Delta Junction. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer and Len Anderson in Anchorage, Ben Matheson in Nome, the CBC's Aaron Collins in Calgary, Maria Dudzak in Ketchikan, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Jacob Resnick in Kodiak, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Adam Kane in Dillingham, and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
And by
Fire Island Wind, offering a fuel-free energy alternative to South Central Alaska natural gas. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.
It's almost time to file online for your PFD, and when you do, you can make an impact by sharing just a little with a cause you care about. Celebrate the arts, invest in education, shelter a homeless pet, lend a hand, or even make a wish come true when you pick, click, give to one of Alaska's nonprofits. Visit pickclickgive.org to decide how you will make Alaska better with a small gift from your PFD. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.